Frankfurt.
Der sonnige Podcast.
Willkommen zur 42. Ausgabe von Sunpod, sagt Michael. Das nachfolgende Gespräch mit Vandana Shiva, der alternativen Nobelpreisträgerin aus Indien, habe ich vor 4 Wochen anlässlich der UNO-Konferenz für NGOs in Bonn aufgezeichnet. Das Gespräch haben wir auf Englisch geführt und weil ich finde, dass es sehr gut zu verstehen ist, senden wir das jetzt auch in der Originalfassung ohne Übersetzung. In der nächsten Viertelstunde hören wir zunächst einige Dinge, die wir möglicherweise schon kennen, über ihre Arbeit. Und dann habe ich mir die Freiheit genommen, noch einige Fragen zu stellen, die darüber hinausgehen. Ja, und das Wort hat jetzt Vandana Shiva.
My name is Dr. Vandana Shiva. I started life as a physicist. Did my doctorate work on the foundations of quantum theory. But realized very fast that the ecological catastrophes around us needed attention. And so initially as a part-time and then full-time, I started to do participatory research with communities fighting against ecological destruction. And this then led me to also look at how agriculture was becoming a very big part of the problem. 1984 was the year of Bhopal, the worst industrial disaster of the world. It was the year of terrorism in Punjab. Both took 30,000 lives. And I asked myself the question, why is agriculture like war? So I started to study what was the Green Revolution, why were chemicals used in farming, which then threw me into the heart of the emerging biotechnologies and the plans of the industry to genetically modify every seed, patent every life form, acquire every small business. And that future looks like a total dictatorship over life, not just over people. Mm-hmm. And I started to save seeds and started the movement called Navdanya, where we save seeds, we promote organic farming and defend alternatives that serve the biodiversity of this planet and the farmers and the rights of people to food.
Mm-hmm. I read that this Bhopal disaster was like a turning point in your life. And I'm sure there were many other women around, well-educated and maybe even scientists, but you were the one to take action. So, what makes the difference? Maybe something in your biography or your education, what let you take action and others not?
Well, you know, the most active, of course, were the victims themselves.
Okay.
Who were women from the slums of Bhopal, who are still fighting till date for justice. I contextualize Bhopal in the larger issues of a violent farming system that does violence to the earth and violence to people. And why did I do it and why didn't others? I guess there are 3 things. One is I was active in CHIPCO, the movement where women came out to hug trees in my region. And, you know, scientists are trained to hide behind doors of privilege. And they think being involved with community, society, people is somehow a dilution of knowledge, which is not true, because to behave like an elite is a class issue. It has nothing to do with epistemology. It has nothing to do with knowledge. And it's a very false idea of classism pretending to be expertise. And I had shed that long ago.
Yes.
I knew better.
Yes.
By being involved with people.
Yes.
I didn't dilute my knowledge, I enriched my knowledge. So that privilege of science, you know, I didn't have that pretension.
Yeah.
And I think the third is because the kind of science I did with quantum theory, it opens, you know, it's about connection. If Newtonian mechanics is about fragmentation.
Yes.
Quantum theory is about connection and relationship.
Yes.
And I'm constantly looking for what's connected to what.
Okay.
And I could see in Bhopal that the chemical pesticide company was related to the disaster. But immediately my mind also went to my own experience as a child using neem in our grain bins, in our clothing, as a pest control agent, and I said, we don't have to have these killer pesticides
yes.
when there are things like neem. So I started the campaign,
yes.
No More Bhopals, Plant yeah. a Neem.
Yes.
So that's why I then, 10 years later,
okay.
fought the case against the patenting of neem. So making connections is part of my intellectual training.
Ah, okay.
And just like you cultivate things, you cultivate plants, you cultivate
yes.
habits, I have cultivated this relational knowledge.
Yes.
And with it, the responsibility that it brings.
Uh-huh.
And with it, the responsibility of being part of society, not being outside society.
Right. Okay, I understand. You seem very energetic. I see you travel around the world a lot. Everybody, just before was Deutsche Welle with an interview, everybody wants something. But you seem very powerful at the same time, because it is very energy consuming everything around you, I think. How do you make it? Have you a special meditation or diet or whatever? What is your secret?
Well, first is the consciousness.
Yes.
For me, energy is the energy that pervades the universe.
Yes.
And if you are deeply connected to that energy, how can you run out of energy?
Okay.
Because that energy is exhaustless.
Yes.
And so you can connect to that energy in many ways. One of the ways is meditation.
Yes.
One of the ways is constantly being aware.
Okay.
You can't sit at a podium
yeah.
and be meditating because you have to give a talk.
Yes.
But while you're giving a talk, your consciousness can be in that larger world.
Okay.
And your talk is just one little expression and manifestation.
Do you think that your Indian culture helped you to get into this state of mind?
Definitely the Indian culture helps, because that's the cosmology in which we are brought up. But it doesn't mean you have to be an Indian
okay.
to experience
course,
it. After all, some of the biggest followers of His Holiness the Dalai Lama
yeah.
are Germans and Americans.
Yes.
So Buddhism too is about being part of
yeah.
this larger
yeah.
Compassionate universe. You know?
Do you think there is a connection between India and Germany concerning the way of thinking, maybe?
I think for sure that Germany has had holistic worldviews.
Yes.
And even the idea of a worldview is constantly referred to in German discourse.
Mm-hmm.
Weltanschauung.
Weltanschauung.
Yeah. You don't hear that in America. You don't hear that in England.
Okay.
So, you know, the Anglo-Saxon world has had too long a mental intellectual training in fragmentation,
mm-hmm.
in just looking at the part.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think
Newton was English.
Yeah, and societies that are able to keep this larger whole mm-hmm. in mind.
Yeah.
The whole could be the universe, the whole yeah. could be the planet,
yeah.
the whole could be the society.
Yes.
But it's always more than that fragment.
Yes, right. Okay. Maybe a shift to another subject. Solar cooking. What are your experiences? Do you use solar cookers in your Navdanya movie?
Yes, we do.
Which kind of cookers?
Well, we have the parabolic ones
yes.
that concentrate the
yeah.
reflection. And we largely use it for tea, for dals.
Okay.
That's what we use.
So cooking great amounts of
yeah.
food and
yeah.
Water.
Huh? We okay. did try to use solar dryers.
Yes.
For drying teas and herbs.
Yeah.
And my colleagues didn't have a very good experience.
Really?
With that. Said it became black. So, but maybe they put it, you know, I mean, these are all things where you learn how to do things right.
Okay.
But what I love about the solar cooker is
in some places.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So, but I mean, we got a dryer for mainly our herbs, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. There is a Latin proverb, nomen est omen. You know it?
No.
The name has a meaning, the name of a person. You know what I want? Do you think there is a connection with the quality or the energy of Shiva? With you?
Well, you know, I think, of course, a name has meaning.
Yes.
But I take deep pride in the fact that my name, Shiva, was adopted by my parents as part of the anti-caste movement.
Uh-huh.
And they get in India, every name has a caste. It has a meaning which tells you what caste you are.
Okay.
And because they were fighting caste and following Gandhi, they got rid of their caste name and adopted the name Shiva.
Okay. As a program?
As a militant program.
Yes.
So no one knows what caste I am, which is wonderful.
Yes, of course.
But the other beautiful thing is, because Shiva, it belongs to the entire country.
Yeah.
Someone thinks I'm South Indian, someone thinks I'm from Orissa. People can adopt me for whichever part of the country they think they would like me to be from.
But now he is one of the three of the Trinity, and he has a special quality.
Yes.
Do you see a connection with
this? Oh, yes, very much. And Monsanto actually, and the biotech industry, put a whole blog about how I was doing the Tandav. And I was thinking in my head with joy, but the Tandav is beautiful. Tandav is the dance that Shiva does.
Yeah.
But he does it to destroy a destructive order that has gone beyond the limits.
Yes.
To then, out of that, create a new order of harmony, of peace. So I see my life as a Tandav to destroy the violent order of corporate rule, wars, destruction of the planet, injustice to people, pushing millions to billions to hunger, to create a world in which we work with the earth to provide food for all.
Yes. I have a few words what I would like to hear your opinion about. First is peak oil, or the chance of peak oil.
I don't think that we're talking anymore about the chance of peak oil. The top geologists, as well as the oil industry, have admitted that there is a peaking of oil. After all, it's not a huge scientific theory. Any non-renewable resource will reach a time where you've exploited most of it.
Yes.
And then after that, there'll be less.
Yes.
And to exploit it will be more costly.
Yes.
It's that simple. It's really an announcement of the exhaustion of non-renewable resources.
Yeah. But I think the whole industrial agriculture depends on cheap oil.
Yeah.
So when it gets more expensive, it will collapse or not?
Well, no, industrial agriculture will collapse.
Fertilizers and pesticides.
Fertilizers come from fossil fuels.
Yes.
It's getting more costly.
Yes.
But even more serious is phosphates. Mineral phosphates, which are part of the unholy trinity of chemical fertilizers, nitrogen, phosphate, potassium.
Yes.
20 years is all we have of deposits. After that, it'll collapse. So you'll need renewable sources of phosphate.
Yes.
It isn't the case that if we don't mine phosphate, we have no phosphate.
Oh, well, we know.
Nature creates phosphate.
Of course.
Then this industrial agriculture is running out of water.
Yes.
So there are many, many, many limitations coming up on it.
Yeah. I think on Friday night you invited the whole auditory to visit you and your school or University of the Earth. Maybe you can say one sentence about this on your university.
Well, you know, basically Navdanya grew out of saving seeds and saving them from patents and genetic engineering. But out of that has grown a whole movement of organic farming, of showing how ecologically we produce more food. So you can have biodiversity and eat it. It doesn't run out. In fact, it's when you eat it that you grow it more. And the farm has ended up being a learning center, an educational center of how to live at peace with the earth.
Yes.
And the reason I like to invite people there is both because it is a beautiful experience, as well as there's so much to learn from nature, from the experience of the farmers, and to recognize that we don't have to have starvation and hunger in the world.
Yes.
We don't have to have agriculture that's monocultures. We grow more than 1,000 crop varieties. 680 rice is growing right now. I think that's an experience because it wakes people up to the potential that we have.
Okay, so you not only invite Indian farmers but everybody from all over the world.
Absolutely, because the challenge to biodiversity, the challenge of food insecurity is global.
Okay, thank you.
Sunpod.
Der sonnige Podcast.
Solarkocher und Elektroautos. Neue Ideen für alle. Wenn euch diese Episode gefallen hat, empfehlt uns bitte weiter. Mehr Infos unter www.elektroautos.de.